Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Beam me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, D.A., I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, D.A., what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
D.A., what's the silly? Oh, permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, D.A.? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My co-worker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's D.A. on CBS Sports Radio.
Ah, the Zap Zap Orchestra. The sweet, smooth stylings. We come to you live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. O'Reilly, better parts, better prices every day. Glad you're with us here on the D.A. Show. New time, same great taste. We're also webcast. WatchDA.com. On a commercial-by-commercial basis, I'm going to try to up the color here inside the studio because it does feel like an atomic bunker from 1950. I'm hiding under my desk right now as the sirens go off. So what do you think, Mraz? Right now there's an oversized Ryan Howard head, a Gig'em Aggies foam finger, and a Christmas decoration.
You look like you've set up exactly why the show Hoarders exists right now. Like, why were those even back by your desk? I have no idea.
Last night, the Houston Rockets get the game one victory over Oklahoma City, and they handed out the red t-shirts to everybody. Now, this has become such a hokey tradition in the NBA or the NHL playoffs. Everybody wear the same color. We'll leave the t-shirt on your chair. And so everybody's wearing red in Houston. J.J. Watt's at the game. J.J. Watt, of course, looks at the t-shirt and puts the t-shirt on. Now, J.J. Watt's a large man. That's a big boy. That's what we call biggin'. But also, I think he asked for a super small. J.J. Watt loves himself in some tight clothing. And the ladies, of course, do as well.
She's a bad girl, David.
But he puts this on, and it's like it's painted on. Now, I don't know if you've ever gotten a free t-shirt at a stadium. Actually, everybody has. So that's the stupidest question ever. We've all gotten a free t-shirt at a stadium. It's always two sizes too big to fit everybody. I don't care what type of mountain of a man J.J. Watt is. I think he asked for a small. Would you put that past him for J.J. Watt because he knew he was going to be flexing at the Rockets game?
Yeah, my guess would be he had the same size everybody else does on the chair, and he probably turned to whoever he knows that works at the arena, because I'm sure he knows everybody, and says, you could definitely have a couple size smaller, right? And they bring him there one, and then his biceps are popping out of it, and he looks like the Incredible Hulk.
But how do you even get a smaller one? Isn't there always a one-size-fit-all for all of these stadium giveaways?
Because I bet you they're still selling some in the gift shop, because just like rally towels, what they do with these games is you show up, you get a freebie, and then, you know, your Uncle Joe goes, hey, babe, bring me home one, and you can never get another free one. So you go to the store and you buy one for $15.
Is that the racket?
That is the racket. I've seen it happen at Madison Square Garden. I'm sure it happens at the Toyota Center.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Come on, let's boogie! You know, can JJ just wear something a little bit looser? Just a little bit to look like a regular guy. Everybody else is decked out like a dork in an oversized smock at this thing. Go Rockets or Blast Off or whatever their dumb slogan's going to be. And there's J.J. Watt in like a kid's medium, just tearing out of it like Incredible Hulk. The guy's unbelievable. Oh, Ellen. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. On Twitter, D.A., on CBS. So we all hate the excessive celebration penalties in the NFL. We all hate them. I think we can basically never agree on anything except Roger Goodell stinks as a commissioner and excessive celebration penalties are the worst. And here's Scott Green, head of the NFL Referees Association on Sirius XM NFL Radio, quote, nothing is worse than someone going 80 yards for a touchdown, and then we're trying to figure out, does that warrant a flag or what he's doing in the end zone? We don't really enjoy that. If we could get to a point where it would simply be fines by the league, that would be great. The issue we'll still have is that guys can get pretty creative out there. The question of whether it's a foul or not a foul, hopefully we'll get closer to more of a black and white situation, end of quote. You think? Like, why are we not just fining guys for excessive celebration? Why is that affecting the team and field position and the game? They're dancing. They're twerking. I mean, Antonio Brown getting 15 yards for twerking is insanity.
And now he is twerking his face.
It's total insanity. I mean, it's like, oh, well, we can have 3,000 Cialis commercials where some woman is draped all over her middle-aged husband on a cabana on a beach, like basically come hither. But the moment that Antonio Brown twerks, oh, that we can't have that.
Get on top of the guy and they'll do a lap dance.
We cannot have that. That's a 15-yard penalty. Sorry, Steelers, you're backed up 15. Like, the NFL is so mind-numbingly stupid and hypocritical sometimes. It will sell sex. Oh, well, cheerleaders don't have to wear any clothes. I mean, none. But if Antonio Brown, like, moves his butt in a particular way, it's 15 yards. I mean, it's totally insanity. It's total insanity. So, yes, it should be a fine. Well, it shouldn't be a fine at all. Nothing should be a fine in terms of celebrating. But it should definitely not be in the referee's hands because, as the refs are saying right now, we're trying to judge the game. A guy's going down the field for a touchdown, and then we have to decide whether his dancing is family appropriate. But think about how stupid that is. That's why last week when Dean Blandino was having bouquets thrown at him by Peter King, oh, we love Dean Blandino. Oh, the NFL won't be able to move past Dean Blandino. They're really going to miss him. Oh, blah, blah, blah. What do you mean? The last 5 years, if not more, but certainly Blandino's tenure, have been pockmarked by us not knowing any of the rules. It doesn't matter how long you've been watching football. We don't know the rules. And, oh, look at this. Everything is over-officiated. Oh, I don't know how we'll get past Dean Blandino. He was the glue that kept together the NFL. Just shut up, Peter King. I mean, honestly. Oh, we'll never be able to move past Dean Blandino leaving. He was just so important. I don't know why that's my mother hen Peter King voice, but it was unbelievable. Yeah, I don't know how we're going to move past the era where the head of officiating partied on one of the team buses.
I am a smart Cowboy fan. I know about football.
How will we ever move past that?
He just kept the NFL together. Oh, it was so important. Oh, mother hen Peter King.
But it wasn't just Peter King. It was other people. Blandino oversaw an era where you couldn't twerk without it being 15 yards. Yeah, how will we ever survive him leaving? My God. I mean, it just goes to show you, there are just a few people inside that old boys club of the NFL where if you are in and popular, it's like a Supreme Justice Court nomination. You just won't ever leave. Like, Dean Blandino could have been the worst ever at his job. He doesn't go anywhere because he gets, you know, he can party with the right people. That Dean, man, he's just one great guy. I just loved having him on that bus, man. He was just one great guy, man. He was awesome.
And nobody else doing nothing? It's not Jerry Jones.
I didn't say it was Jerry Jones, but that was Jones' bus. I will say that.
But you people are always dogging out the Cowboys. You won't. Everybody won't right now. It doesn't work like that.
Also, the 15-yard penalty. Why? Because Roger Goodell says, well, players are role models. Huh. Well, that's interesting. Because I saw Josh Brown active for a football game after admitting he abused his wife. Oh, I saw Greg Hardy signed by a team and play on national TV after throwing his girlfriend into a bed of guns. Oh, but players are role models, so we should definitely make sure that they don't twerk in the end zone. I remember Leonard Little being so drunk, he drove his car into oncoming traffic and killed a lady and then came back to the NFL. I remember Dante Stallworth doing the same thing, except he was both drunk and high, killed a person, a pedestrian, came back to the NFL. I remember Leonard Little, after doing that, getting another DUI and coming back to the NFL. Oh, but players are role models. So what's the 15-yard penalty on Jim Irsay? Because as a role model, as an owner of an NFL team, he pushed pills. I mean, he was basically a drug addict, and he was selling them as well. I mean, a duffel bag full of cash in his car. So is he a role model too, or that's not in play here, Raj? But 15 yards, if you twerk, do not twerk on our watch, because these are role models. I mean, please. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. Twitter, DA on CBS. Cavaliers blew the one seed. The Cavaliers are the two. The Cavaliers looked atrocious down the stretch. The Cavaliers also struggled to win game one. And I'll tell you this, in a lot of ways, they're very lucky they got out of game one with a victory, because they did not play good defense. They gave the Pacers a final shot to win. They had great closeout defense on that final play. But I'm wondering, if you're going to exert that much energy in a game one against a seven seed, how do you expect to get through the next three rounds of the NBA playoffs? Now, I think right now, if the Cavaliers got to the NBA Finals but lost to the Warriors in five or something, I don't think anybody would say it's a terrible season. You know, they would have not defended their crown, but they would have done, I think, what a lot of people would have expected, getting back to the NBA Finals. And maybe running out of gas once they got there. I mean, this is a team that has played long playoff series, two taxing NBA Finals. LeBron specifically has been to six. If he gets to seven NBA Finals, no matter what happens there, maybe a sweep if you get blown out by 25 points in every game. But I think just getting to the NBA Finals would be kind of seen as what they were supposed to accomplish. But are they going to be able to win 11 more games in the Eastern Conference Finals Eastern Conference playoffs if they look like that? It's just, they're already on fumes, I feel like. And they already, I think, are assuming they can flip the switch. And Chris Mannix talked about this last hour. And I think it's a really dangerous way to go into it. And they should have simply taken care of business in their final four regular season games to be able to kind of breathe a sigh of relief and an exhale that they were going to have home court advantage throughout. Now, maybe the Bulls matchup's not a very good matchup because we just saw the Bulls take game one from the Celtics. What I am saying is, if you got to put forth that much effort and you have to survive based on a missed jump shot, a missed three-pointer at the end of the game to get one against the Pacers, if this thing goes six or seven and in the second round against the Raptors or the Bucks, could easily go six or seven. And then the Eastern Finals, who knows who they would face if the Bulls knocked off the Celtics. But, you know, you're talking about a really taxing road just to get to the NBA Finals. And I don't know if this team has it in them. 855-212-4CBS. When we return, your best audio of the day, including a very testy and combative Doc Rivers. It's Soundcheck. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Muffins, mornings, mothership.
I listen to all these shows. You're right at the top. Hopefully it'll work out great for you, and hope the Moraz also.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Remember, the DA show in its new time slot. Full episodes available on iTunes, minus commercial interruption. So go there, download on demand whatever hour you want, or all three of the hours, and listen to them at your leisure. It's called time shifting. We do this with TV all the time. If you used to listen to us in our previous time slot of the evenings, you can listen to the entire show when you want by downloading it on iTunes or going to our website, daoncbs.com. Earlier in the show, we were discussing how Larry Johnson was one of these great NBA players that kind of came into the league and seemed like he would destroy everything, a little bit like the Greek Freak is doing after that game one victory. The world's going to realize how monstrous and devastating the matchup nightmare and all the versatility that he brings to the table is when it comes to Antetokounmpo. And I said, you know, it's a little bit like Larry Johnson, although his career was cut short because of the back injury. When LJ was coming out of UNLV, he just seemed like he was going to revolutionize the game. Maybe less so because he wasn't as long and as fast and could run the point like Giannis. But, you know, LJ seemed like he was of the next generation, and it kind of never worked out for him because of the back. Dr. Scott tweets in, D.A., LJ, though, did get a Family Matters episode opposite Urkel, which is kind of better than the Hall of Fame, don't you think? And that's actually a tremendous point. What would you rather be, an NBA Hall of Famer where there's, you know, there's a bunch of scrubs that get in the NBA Hall of Fame? Also, there's like administrators. It's multiple genders. It's also, I think, colleges in there as well. It's just a billion people get into the Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield, but very few get their own episode on TGIF. So I don't know. I mean, when you think about it, maybe the more closed group, the more esteemed collection is to be actually amongst people that had their own TGIF episode.
Yeah, and also, I'm sure that Family Matters rerun is played on TV Land or whatever numerous times. He probably collects 5 cents every time that episode airs. Not collecting 5 cents every time somebody, you know, goes through the Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield.
That's a great point. Although LJ is probably collecting even more than that to be a James Dolan yes man over the Madison Square Garden. By the way, speaking of Family Matters, did you ever notice that Eddie from Family Matters, who was the son, the oldest son, looked exactly like a young Lawrence Taylor? Exactly. I just tweeted out them side by side, so you can check that out on Twitter, DA on CBS. I mean, it's spit an image. A young Eddie, Lawrence Taylor, like not the beard Lawrence Taylor from 1986, but more when he shaved the beard and had the square top. I forget what you, like kind of a fade, I think it's the fade.
That's not a flat top?
We sound so white right now. We need Tiki or Brian Jones to clarify this for us, whatever that the hair was. But is that not a spitting image, an amazing spitting image, Moran?
Same face, we're just missing the lightning bolt earring.
Exactly, yeah, right. Yeah, so check that out on our Twitter page, DA on CBS of the handle. Also, we'll post it on our Facebook page, Facebook.com/TheDA Show. Time for sound check.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
We start with Paul George, Pacers forward, who had the chance to take the last shot down one against the Cavs in game one, but decided to pass.
You know, Richard can't guard both of us, CJ and Lance. But he didn't do so. I gave it up, you know, to soften him up and try to get it back. I talked to CJ about it. Situations like that, I got to get the last shot.
You know, Paul George wants the last shot. I understand that. He's not good historically with the last shot, but he made the right basketball play there. He's double covered. His teammate is uncovered or has single coverage on him. You know, you dish it, you kick it. And this was, I thought, always the stupidest criticism of LeBron early in his career, maybe before he had the championships. He would defer too much in crucial situations. Well, when you're a distributor or even when you're the star, you have to make the right pass, the right play. And guess what happened when Michael didn't just take the final shot? He started winning championships and dished to John Paxson and dished to Steve Kerr. So kicking it out to a guy who has a shot and a makeable shot is the right basketball play, whether you're the star, the alpha dog or not. Paul George made the right play. Shot didn't go in. Damian Lillard of the Blazers, as his team loses to the Warriors over the weekend in Game 1, says the NBA has gotten a little soft, but playing a guy like Draymond means you got to raise your game.
The league has softened up a lot, and it's not like that, so you got to have a rough guy like him out there. I think it's necessary, and I think their team, they depend on him to be that dog out there and to be that person. So For me, it's just going to make me raise the level of my game because I take it as a challenge. And I'm also, like CJ said, I'm going to take exception to it, and I'm going to say something back.
He was a dog, and I'm talking about Draymond Green, and I think everybody says that in a complimentary way, is that Draymond was an enormous difference maker on the Warriors. I mean, I kind of wonder where Golden State would be if they had not added Kevin Durant, because they were locked in a tough bout with the 8 seed and the Blazers over the weekend for three quarters, and then kind of the fourth quarter they pulled away. But without Durant's 30 points and kind of instantaneous offense and ability to finish at the rack and everything, I wonder if teams would have started to catch up to the Warriors or kind of figure out how to beat them. I don't think that the Blazers are particularly well served to try to do so in a series, because, you know, we saw last year a Thunder team that could really be physical with you be a perfect antidote, and they had the 3-1 series lead before collapsing in the Western Finals, and then down 3-1, what the Cavs were able to do. I don't think the Blazers are suited for that, but it makes me wonder, had they not added Kevin Durant, whether that was going to be kind of a 2-year run of excellence, and then they kind of came back to the pack and not have been so revolutionary and so extraordinary. But Draymond pushed them over the hump again in game one, because not only did he play great defense, they don't have guys that play great defense besides him, he also created offense for them in doing so. And finally, Doc Rivers, following a game one loss to Utah, getting a little snippy.
Finally, you know, when you were down two, I'm just...
Who would do that? Like, why would you ever do that?
Like, to maybe 5 seconds. You know,
so
enough
if you
time
miss,
for an offense.
The game's over.
Right. Well, no, like
that
5 seconds.
That makes no sense.
Right. I'm just asking.
No, that is like the dumbest thing I've ever heard. When you're down two,
right.
you try to score.
Exactly.
And so then you put it on your... You don't wait.
You rely on your defense.
You score.
As quickly as you can, however
if you can score in 1 second, you score.
Gotcha.
Yeah, you always do that.
All right.
And if you can find another coach to tell you different, I want to meet him.
So that was Doc Rivers being asked the question about whether the Clippers scored too fast in game one in their loss, allowing the Jazz time to come back down the floor and get the game winner. I tend to agree with Doc Rivers. I think it's a little bit silly for media to be second-guessing how quickly you want to take the lead, because there is no guarantee. It's not like not soaking the seconds off of the play clock when that's kind of just given to you and it makes no difference one way or the other if you're going to kick the extra point or kick a game-winning field goal or throw one last pass or something. You know, in this case, if the best shot is with 11 seconds left in the game, you have to take that shot. And in that case, the Clippers did do that and got to the rack and got the basket, versus waiting until 2 seconds and then the shot is not as good and then you've missed it, as Doc Rivers is saying. But this speaks to a larger point. And the larger point is the Clippers are harried. The Clippers right now are out of sorts. The Clippers have enormous pressure on them, and Doc Rivers is representing that pressure. They know everybody's on the line here. And could the whole thing be blown up? Perhaps. Could Doc Rivers be blown out? Perhaps. Could Blake Griffin be gone? Could Chris Paul be gone? Anything is possible if they don't get out of the first round. And I think Doc, some of this is good pressure on them. I think some of this is bad pressure on them. And Doc sniping after a game one loss, and Doc is amazing with the media. You know, I covered him for years when I worked in Boston. He's amazing with the media. He rarely gets short-tempered. That underscores that they all feel the negative part of the pressure as well, especially going down 0-1. That's your sound check. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. On Twitter, DA on CBS. When we return, could Miami quarterback Brad Kaya be this year's version of Dak Prescott? We'll talk to the Miami Hurricanes quarterback coming up here next, as we are now counting down the days until the NFL draft. It's quarterback in the draft time here on the DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
New time slot.
same hijinks.
Are you still going to be doing the beam up thing? You know, if people are calling in asking me beamed up in the morning, that's just a lot of jobs that are just going to be losing people, right?
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Don't worry. You'll figure it out as you listen. 39 minutes past the hour. Thanks for being with us. DA with you. A little reminder that if your local affiliate doesn't pick us up, we're always streaming using the CBS Sports app, the TuneIn app, the radio.com app, or Apple Music. So check them all out. Also, if you're in front of your computer, you can watch us. The webcast is on watchda.com, or you can listen to us by going to cbssportsradio.com. An interesting NFL draft for quarterbacks. You have some of the guys near the top, like Mitch Trubisky, as well as Deshaun Watson. You also have guys that could get pushed up into the first round, like Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Kaiser. And then if that happens, that next tier of guys could get pushed up maybe into the second or third round. And Brad Kaya, Miami Hurricanes quarterback, certainly has interest around the NFL as a quarterback coming into this NFL draft. And Kaya joined us now. Brad, how you doing?
Hey, pretty good, man. Pretty good. Just ate breakfast and got a call from you guys. So it's a pretty good morning.
I appreciate you carving out some time for us. And so what is the final 10 days of this like for you? What's your daily routine like right now?
Yeah, right now, I've just been kind of traveling, you know, a little bit, and got a visit coming up in tomorrow morning, tomorrow afternoon, and just trying to find ways to squeeze in workouts and just, you know, stay in good shape and, you know, not lose the progress I've made over the past few months. So,
is that the visit to the Steelers coming up tomorrow?
Oh, no. I'm visiting Houston, actually, tomorrow.
Gotcha.
Yeah, visiting Houston.
When you visit with teams as a quarterback, obviously leadership is such a big part of the position, and forget just what happens on the field. What's the priority for you to kind of convey to the GM, the scout, the head coach? What do you really want to bring to the table?
Just to show them that, you know, I'm mature and I'm, you know, I'm a legitimate guy in the sense that I can operate a professional NFL offense and, you know, carry out the tasks that I'm needed to carry out. And as well as, you know, dispel any, you know, misconceptions they may have about me as well. So,
do you feel like there's any misconceptions out there that continually pop up that you need to kind of push away?
There hasn't been anything in particular. I don't really pay attention to, you know, a whole bunch of hoopla and stuff, but, there hasn't been any one thing in particular with any team. It's just depending on what that team in particular may have to ask about me. Because I've met with, you know, all kinds of different coaches and different teams and stuff. So it's each team has their own set of questions in a sense that's kind of unique to that team as well. You know.
Yeah. So, you know, Dak Prescott had an amazing rise to success and stardom last year, and he was drafted in the fourth round by the Cowboys. Is that something that you look at and say, boy, you know what? People didn't expect him because he wasn't a first-round draft pick to jump into the limelight, but he was ready to do so, and I feel confident because of that as well. Do you compare yourself at all to him?
I don't pay much of a whole lot of attention to Dak. I watched, you know, some of his games and watched him a little bit, but I try to focus on more guys that I try to, you know, emulating and, you know, be like, hopefully one day, like guys like Matt Ryan or a guy like Tom Brady. Watch a lot of Drew Brees and Matt Stafford. Dak's a good guy to follow, and I think the biggest thing with Dak's story is it shows that, you know, no matter what, you know, where you go or whether you're first round, fourth round, you know, once you get into a training camp, I mean, even as a free agent, you know, once you get in the training camp, I mean, everyone is created equal in a sense, and Dak showed that, and I guess the biggest takeaway from Dak's story that I'd take to my game is just to always be ready and to keep getting better. Because, you know, I hear stories about some guys get drafted high and they get complacent, or they take a few weeks off or take a month off, or, you know, during that 5-week span when you have to show up, you know, that that 5 week span that you have off as a player, some guys just take it easy or take a break or, you know, go on vacation like they just won a World Series. And I think Dak's a perfect example of just to, you know, just to keep working and just to keep getting better and perfecting your craft and, you know, not settling with what you're labeled as, but to keep, you know, outgrowing that label. And that's huge.
Brad Kaya, 6'4", 214, three-year starting quarterback for the Miami Hurricanes, joining us here on the show. When we talk about quarterbacks, I mentioned some of the names that pop up for the first round. Are you ever annoyed or bothered that you're not grouped with those guys?
I mean, I don't really pay too much attention to who's projected where, I mean, any of that stuff. You know, I just try to control what I can control. And at this point, you know, while I love to be the first quarterback taken and whatnot, at the same time, you know, we're all about to be competing with guys who are in the league right now. And I think it's, you know, it's also good to focus not just on the draft, but how to be the best pro possible. And I can't really, you know, spend my time worrying about who says what or what a certain guy's opinion is. I've gotten some good feedback from a lot of different teams and different coaches. And I'm not too worried about, you know, who goes where. I mean, you know, my sights are on a lot bigger things than just, you know, getting drafted high. Because, you know, yeah, I mean, immediate money is cool and it's good. And at the same time, you know, while having a lot of money is a great thing, at the end of the day, we're all going to sign contracts. And it's not about your first contract. It's about, you know, playing well and staying in the league as long as possible and hopefully being, you know, a Hall of Famer or being a Super Bowl winning quarterback. So while that's, yeah, I mean, that's something that motivates me. It's not the end all be all because I have a lot more to do than just get drafted.
You know, it's interesting because Mitch Trubisky is only a one-year starter at UNC, and that's one of the things that people knock about him. Yeah, he's got all this talent, but he was only a starter for 1 year. You were a starter beginning your true freshman season at Miami. Do you feel like that's a real strength of yours, having 3 years as a starter and still being young because you just finished your junior season?
Yeah, I mean, I'm 21 years old, so I'd say I'm one of the younger quarterbacks in this draft, and I do think that my experience will help me because I've played in 38 plus games. You know, I've seen all kinds of different experiences. I've had adverse situations in college. I've seen my coach get let go. I've seen three different head coaches. You know, I've had coordinators change. I've had personnel change. I've had, you know, the personnel my freshman year was night and day different compared to what I had my junior year and even my sophomore year. So stuff like that. I mean, just situations like that are very comparable to the NFL because, I mean, in the NFL, you know, stuff isn't going to go perfect. I mean, it's impossible unless you're, you know, unless you're the Patriots or Tom Brady. Right. But even then, you still got the slate gate. But still, I mean, you know, stuff isn't always going to be perfect in the NFL, and personnel is going to change. And you might have some free agent guys come in, or guys might get hurt because it is a long season, or, you know, stuff might not always go your way, or coaches might change. So I think situations like that, even, and in terms of what I've seen on the field, I think that's going to help me in the long run. And, you know, really help me and prepare me for whatever gets thrown my way at the next level.
You know, you mentioned that coaching turnover you have dealt with the Hurricanes, and I also read a quote where you said, you know, I feel comfortable, even though we didn't win a national championship, I feel comfortable saying that I left it better than I found it. How rough mm-hmm. was the situation when you went to Miami and you were a true freshman starter? And I think in a lot of ways you were kind of asked to be the savior in some ways as a true freshman mm-hmm. starting quarterback.
Right. I mean, when I first got there, let's see, it was Coach Golden's, second to last year there?
Right.
I mean, just when I first got there, it was just the culture in general was a lot different than how it is now. I'd say the state of the program was a little bit, you know, it was kind of a tough situation in general just to step into. We had limited scholarships. They had just came off a season that started good but kind of ended, you know, pretty badly. I think they ended on some game losing streak, might have been 3-game or 4-game or something like that. And we had some new guys coming up, and you know, a couple guys were asked to play earlier than they would have liked to. And it was just a tough year. You know, the fan base was kind of split at one point, and you know, some people wanted Coach Golden to stay. A lot of people wanted Coach Golden out of there. There was banners above, you know, probably every home game I played, there was probably a banner flying above the game saying, "Fire Coach Golden." You know, certain games we get booed out of the stadium. I mean, it was rough. I mean, even games that we'd be winning or stuff like that, I mean, we'd still, you know, there'd still be boos, there'd still be people leaving, and, you know, some home games might get 20,000 people. Some home games might get, you know, more, but it was just all over the place. And I think just the way that the program's trending now, and just the recruits are getting, and just the momentum and energy surrounding it, I think it's night and day different. I think just the way that we finished last season, and you know, just the fact that we won the first bowl game in 10 years, I think that speaks for itself. Because I mean, that was something that we hadn't did in a while, was just finish the season the way that we should have. And we finished with a 5-game win streak, something that hadn't been done since 2001. And I just felt good about the direction the program was heading in, and I felt good. You know, I felt that if the season had gone a different way, or if we had gone, say, 5-7, or say 6-6 even, we had, you know, gotten blown out in the bowl game, and it was just another, you know, average Miami year, you know, I wouldn't have felt comfortable leaving the program and leaving my brothers who I came in with, and guys who I spent time with in recruiting, and, you know, been through the worst possible situations with. I wouldn't have felt felt good leaving those guys and leaving the fans. But at the end of the day, I felt comfortable, and I felt comfortable handing the program off to the next guy in line.
Brad Kaya, quarterback.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, Brad Kaya, quarterback. Miami Hurricanes joins us here on the show. It's interesting that you bring up all that stuff with the fans, because the fans still remember when the Canes were winning national championships, and they wanted to get back to that point in time. And, you know, sometimes you were the focus of criticism because of that, and there were these kind of outsized expectations. Do you ever feel like that criticism or that frustration that fans had was a little misplaced because the past was so long ago? I always wonder, you know, do Hurricanes players go like, that was the 80s and 90s. That was before I was born. Like, I don't know what you guys want from me.
Right. You know, I mean, hey, it's a part of football. You know what I mean? And I try not to focus on what fans say too much. I'm not, you know, my biggest thing in the past 3 years was just playing for the guys around me and playing for my brothers, playing for my coaches as well, because we had been through so much. And, you know, fans can say what they want, and it's a part of the game. And I think, you know, the fact that the fans had, you know, I don't know exactly what they said, because I really don't give it much mind. But, I mean, the way I compare Miami, you know, UM's fan base is almost to an NFL fan base, or almost to a fan base like the Steelers or the Patriots or the Cowboys, and where they expect greatness and where they expect championships, just because that was the standard. And, you know, it's a tough, you know, predicament to be in, but I think that's the only way to go. And the only way to go is to expect greatness. And even though it's hard to live up to, and, you know, we weren't dealt the best cards, I still think that I think that I left the program in a position to where they can, hopefully within the next 3 years or so, achieve that greatness.
Brad Kaya is our guest here on the show. Hey, finally, your mom famously played Felicia in the movie Friday. And Friday is one of these kind of epic, never-ending popular movies. How sick are you of opponents' fans saying bye Felicia to you?
Aside from my freshman season, I haven't really heard it too much.
Oh, okay. Honest. All right. I would have figured you were sick of it.
I had it at times my freshman year, but then, you know, one ACC Rookie of the Year, and, you know,
they can't say that
team, and you know, now it's about, let's just find, I mean, we have to find some new way to try to rattle this guy.
Right.
I don't think that works very well. I mean, say she got paid to make a cameo in a movie back in 1995, and I'd say that's not really an insult, I'd say teams had to find something new to try, because that kind of fizzled out pretty fast.
You were born in 95. Did she film that before or after you were born?
I was filmed right before I was born, and she was actually pregnant with me at the premiere.
Wow.
Yeah,
so you remember that premiere very well.
<Good one. laughs>
Brad Kaya joining us here on the show, quarterback, 3-year starter for the Miami Hurricanes. Brad, it is so cool to catch up with you, man. Thank you so much for carving out time for us. Best of luck for the draft, and hopefully we can catch up after the draft as well, my man.
Sounds good, man. Appreciate it.
Okay, Brad Kaya joining us here on the show. It was it's interesting because you have Mitch Trubisky, who is a 1-year starter, and you have a guy like Brad Kaya, who's a 3-year starter, kind of thrown into the fire as a true freshman. And as I mentioned, in Miami, having worked down there, it is so evident, so obvious that the fans are thirsty for not just a winner, but a big winner. And getting back to dominance, because so much of that fan base was built on the dominance of the 80s, the 90s, and then the early 2000s when they won in 2001. They got back there in 2002. It's been a while. I mean, can you believe the Hurricanes have never played the ACC championship game? They have been in the ACC for more than 10 years. They have never played in the ACC championship game, which is total insanity. And they don't even play on the hard side with Clemson and Florida State and Louisville. So there is this never-ending thirst of why aren't we better? Why aren't we better with Miami Hurricanes fans? And it was Randy Shannon, and then it was Al Golden, and now it's Mark Richt. Why aren't we better? And I think some of the players there just get trapped in the middle of that, like Brad Kaya, a good quarterback that they won games and, as he said, kind of stabilized the program. But it is, why aren't we better? Why aren't we better? Why aren't we better? And I think that there's a real value to that for Kaya coming into this draft of he already had the scrutiny that an NFL team does and the frustration of a fan base. This is not one of those, oh, let's go out and get him, Johnny. Hey, let's go state. Let's go team. You know, Miami largely is a professional sports town, and the Miami Hurricanes are looked at, as he just mentioned, as a professional sports team. Win. Win big. Win dominatingly. And he was thrust in the middle of that, and I do think there's a value to him having navigated those waters as a true freshman and then moving through the last 3 years. When we return, the Clippers, are they 3 games away from being dismantled? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.